I'm Peter Mudlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news. It's based on a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by you. The folks who listen, we want you to be a part of the show with us. So please do tell us about the educators who've inspired you and the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations and your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. And today on the show, we are talking with Todd Stelmach. Todd is a music teacher at Marengo Community High School, and he's also the school's band and choir director. And Todd gets the chance to teach a lot of really cool classes too, from music appreciation to music theory to making music. And he really loves teaching that making music class because it tears down that invisible curtain between students who love music and students who typically join the school band.
I get to see some kids that I never would have seen unless I had that class, and I get to know these guys. And you know, some of those guys have such great musical minds, but they never would have been recognized. Goes, oh, well, you don't play trumpet, you know what I mean?
And one of the most rewarding parts of his job is helping students practice and work through things until finally everything clicks.
That tiny little just, hey, think about that, blend together, you know, just reminding them to think less about this and more about this. It sounded like night and day. And I heard like three kids be like, yeah. You know, when you stop that, you're like, that was it, you know?
We talk about why the school band is such an important social experience for so many students, including him, what he steals from the teachers who inspired him, and so much more. But before we get to that, we've got another education story we want to share. Elgin High School students have been running experiments and conservation efforts on a creek behind their school for decades, and now they need some extra help. Several cottonwood trees have fallen across Poplar Creek behind Elgin High School. Brittany Mallon says it's been happening more and more these past few years. She's an environmental science teacher at the school.
We lose about at least two or three every year, it would seem right now.
Those fallen trees are a symptom of larger ecological issues like erosion happening to the creek, issues that students like R.F. Patel have studied for a community service project.
Here, you see like the stream brink like underneath the bank. There's a ton of erosion underneath. So there's kind of an overhang of land, and that kind of just destabilizes all of that bank. So all of these trees and all that dirt kind of just keeps falling in the water, and it just makes the water quality worse and makes the entire area less stable.
They've tested water quality, sediment, and pollutant levels and found high levels of dissolved oxygen and copper. They also wade into the stream to track macroinvertebrates in the water.
So we take out these big nets, go in the water, kind of kick up some dirt, and see what we can kind of catch to look at, and then we release them back in the water. So you find things as small as like a little mayfly, or as big as like a crayfish. And I think that's one of the biggest issues with the erosion is when you get a lot more of these pollutants in the water, these animals just can't survive anymore. So like year after year, you see less and less in population numbers.
And because Elgin's environmental classes have run experiments here for so long, they can compare their data to previous years and analyze trends. Malin herself went to Elgin High School and conducted similar water studies of Poplar Creek. And she says that experience and her teachers inspired her to come back and teach and continue this work. But she says her environmental classes aren't just for observing. They're also trying to mitigate the problems.
We do invasive removal, so they use tools in the woods and cut down. We mostly have buckthorn as our problem. So they remove that, and then in the spring we buy as many native plants and trees as we can afford with our budgets.
They recently planted a bunch of swamp white oak trees near the creek, but now that the erosion's getting worse, they just don't have the resources to get at the root of the issues. That's why students like Hassan Hamad gave public comments at a recent U46 board meeting asking the district to step in to help restore the creek.
The scale of the damage requires the expertise of environmental professionals who have the tools and knowledge necessary to be able to implement effective and lasting solutions.
That could mean replanting native trees and restabilizing the bank. Students like Hamad outlined their research findings and made the case for why the creek is so important to the school.
A more stable creek will help minimize the effects of flooding and also protect biodiversity. Additionally, students at the school, just like us, use this creek to get hands-on learning experience in environmental science, which makes it an invaluable resource to us.
Jacob Lesh is another student, and he says someone from the school board did reach out after their public comment.
We got a few emails just saying that they really valued our response, but since that, we haven't gotten a direct response yet, but we're still waiting.
Mellon says they just wanted to bring awareness to the issue and don't expect immediate action, but her class is hopeful that the district will take saving the creek seriously. They say if the problems persist, it won't just hurt the creek's ecosystem, it'll hurt the school ecosystem and rob future science students of a hands-on learning lab running right through their backyard. All right, now it's time for my conversation with Marengo Community High School Music Director Todd Stelmach. And we start off talking with him about how busy his schedule can get during certain parts of the school year.
When marching season's over, it's kind of like, oh, I have a family. I remember that.
You're like, wow, I could go for a walk and take a bath. What a joy.
Exactly. You know, in a musical, I'm like, wow, I see my house in the daytime. That's great. So
like peak marching band or like peak, you know, in the springtime, are there days that you are there like until late at night then?
Yeah. You know, I live out in Crystal Lake. So I live, yeah. It's only like a 25-minute drive or so.
Okay.
It's enough that, you know, I don't want to go back and forth. If I have something going on at like 5, right. It doesn't make much sense right. for me to drive. So I usually just stay here. I work on stuff, catch up with work, you know, like right now, I think I have percussion ensemble practicing right now. So I told him, yeah, I'm here for a while. You could practice today after school if you want. And, but yeah, there's like marching season. There are some days I'm here till 9, 10, you know, depending on what we're doing, you know? So.
Right. Well, that's interesting because it's not just like the seasons themselves that like change the big projects, but it also means like, just like your day to day is probably pretty different depending on what part of the school year you're in.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I really love about this gig is that I get to wear a lot of different hats, you know? So some people don't like that. They would prefer to be just like, I'm just one of the 3 or 4 band guys that are in this large school. I like the fact that I'm able to kind of dip my toes into a bunch of different areas of music study and stuff. That's a lot of fun for me.
Yeah. Like, are there any of those fun hats that you get to wear that, again, like maybe not every person who's in like, who is a music teacher in high school that they don't all get to wear that you are particularly fond of?
Yeah. So like, you know, so we have a band and choir, right? We have call those the performance ensembles, very normal. But then I also teach a couple of dual credit classes that we work with McHenry County College. So I teach a year-long music theory, musicianship class that, you know, if they get a C or better, it counts as college credit for MCC. So it's great. And then the other thing I do is dual credit for music appreciation as well.
Yeah.
So, and that was another one that, you know, I get to see a bunch of different kids in there, you know, and that's especially good, you know, because that transfers pretty much to any of the, you know, anything that you need, just like, oh, you need a fine arts class for college, you know, music theory is a little bit more specific, but we all need a fine arts thing to do. And music app puts it right in there. So yeah, I get to do a little bit of that college level stuff, which is fun.
Have you been able to do that for a while then?
This is my second full year doing it.
Cool. Okay,
I've taught music, AP music theory though, for advanced placement theory for years, you know, but we just made the switch over to dual credit last year. Because, you know, it just gives, I actually get to teach the kids more with dual credit.
Oh, really?
Because I don't have to teach to the test, if that makes any sense. Like the
AP really
test,
does, yes.
You know, you want to make
it,
sure
it is the focal point. Yeah.
Yeah. You like, this could be like, I'm going to give you all these assignments or this examples exactly how they are, so you know exactly what to write. Well, now I could just kind of teach them, hey, let's learn a little bit about piano basics, which I didn't ever do because they never tested 8 piano basics in AP music theory, you know? So now my kids are learning, okay, yeah, you got your scales, you got your chords, but now, hey, let's just proper fingering to play piano and stuff, you know, which is cool, you know.
I was fascinated by the music theory class too, because I just like actually at the beginning of the pandemic, I had a friend that was like moving, and they had this really old electric piano, and so they're do you want it? And I was like, I got the space for it, absolutely, I'll take it. And so I started to learn that, and I am like fascinated by music theory, but like I'm curious about how deep you guys get to go, because like I don't know anything about like the you know, the Dorian and Lydian modes. I like that. None of that really makes any sense to me still. I got like really enraptured by like Circle of Fifths as being a fascinating thing to me. But
yeah,
I'm curious, Ben, just like taking those, like what can be, once you get to the high levels, like incredibly complicated topics and like distilling it down in a way that's like engaging and really fun still.
Yeah. No, you know, that's, I think that's the fun part about teaching a theory class, at least for me, is that I'm a theory nerd. I really love digging into
you, a mode guy.
You know, I'm a saxophone player, so I grew up playing sax and a lot of jazz and stuff. So jazz, yeah. So you know, and your knowledge of jazz, you have to figure out, oh, this scale connects to this scale, and this has the same thing as this minor, you know, and hey, the Phrygian would work better in this part. And so to me, it almost feels like I'm playing like a Sudoku game or something. Whenever I get like, okay, let's figure out this, you know, analyze this thing and figure out what's going on. And my kids, you know, usually the kids who take the theory courses are the kids who are really interested in music as either post-high school or something that they like, no, I really, really love music. I want to know how it goes in depth, you know?
Yeah.
So we get pretty in depth. The course takes essentially the first two semesters of theory and musicianship at a college, you know? So yeah. we learn, you know, chordal structure. We learn, you know, not only how to build the chords, but like, you know, what the common chord progressions. We talk about, you know, inversions and, you know, making sure voice leading is good. We don't get so advanced that, you know, we're talking about really crazy stuff like counterpoint or, you know, but like,
microtones.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we do a little bit of modes at the beginning of the year, you know, when we start talking about all the different scales and everything.
I know. People might be listening to this podcast and they're like, are they speaking Latin? What is happening?
Yeah, very true. That's very true. So I always say, like, my wife's a nurse and she throws at these big medical terms at me. I'm just like, what are you talking about? Oh, that's the big toe. I'm like, they call it a big toe then.
Right. And like a part of like you got to teach like classes about creating music as a part of that, right?
Yeah. Right now, you know, I always say the music theory stuff is my more traditional stuff. But
yeah,
one of the things I really love teaching is we call it creating music over here, but it's really just a music class about digital design, like it's a digital audio class. So we get them a DAW and, you know, I teach them how to do like, you know, your basic beats, how to organize a song, you know, give them different projects to work on. And I love that because I know there's so many kids that know that do music at home, right? They do music, but long ago they said band, not for me, choir, not for me, but I'm really into making music online, or I'm really into, you know, rapping or something.
Right,
you know?
Like making those type of like hip hop beats and things like that.
Yeah, right. So I get to see, you know, I see some of my normal traditional kids, but I get to see some kids that I never would have seen, you know, unless I had that class. And I get to know these guys, and you know, some of those guys have such great musical minds, you know, but they never would have been recognized because, oh, well, you don't play trumpet, you know what I mean?
That is so strange, though, that you think about that, the kind of invisible wall that gets put up between band and music when it comes to those things.
And, you know, in general, and that's one thing, like, I grew up as a band guy, you know, I got into the profession originally because of band, but the more I teach and the more I go, I really love the idea of this like senior general music thing, you know, when you're teaching more than just, hey, let's go for a concert, you know, but like, let's dig into like the history, the just the sense of belonging, you know, the, you know, letting kids who write, you know, rap or something feel like that's just as important as, you know, old dead white guys music,
right,
you know?
It's John Philip Sousa, yes, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And right. You know, and that's not a trashing the old stuff. I love the old stuff too, but like
John's doing fine.
Right, no one's Holst isn't broke up because no one's playing the Holst music. People are playing Holst, it's gonna be fine. It's really cool that I'm able to teach, you know, a unit on like Childish Gambino and stuff, and like let them like listen to that stuff and understand what it means.
Yeah, that's you. I hope that, and I bet you do get like a range of different like musical styles people are interested in, genres people are interested in.
Yeah, this last semester I had first time I in the class, and I've been teaching this digital one for probably close to 10 years, a little under, I think, but my first metalhead, and I was so excited.
Yes. Oh, that had to be a great day.
For metalhead. Yeah, you know, so like, oh man, like she gave me her first, like the first project's always just kind of like, oh, okay, just play around, you know, find a cool beat, you know, I'll teach you the basics and then we'll worry about doing more in-depth things. And the first thing she turns in is this killer like metal thing. And I'm just like, oh, this is going to be fun. You know, I love that.
Hopefully some jazz too, though, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, and I got like, I get some jazz guys. I get some, you know, I get some folks who want to do more of a classical, you know, they go to a DAW and they're like, well, you know, the orchestra kind of stinks in this. I'm like, well, you probably aren't, you know, this is more for hits and stuff. If you want to write like classical stuff, I would recommend more of a notation software, because that's going to be a little bit more up your alley. Right. You know, we do that too, but you know, it's definitely a different, you know, path to go that way sometimes.
Right. Well, it's fascinating too, because like, you know, like I love the idea of just like, you know, making music for everyone, depending on, you know, no matter what they're interested in, if it's the traditional type of school band stuff. But like, also, like you mentioned, like you were a school band, you know, growing up, like that was a big thing for you too. And like, that is also just like such a specific and important, like social experience for so many people that are a part of that too. I assume that was for you too.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, I tell my, you know, a lot of the incoming eighth graders and stuff. I almost quit band in eighth grade, before I, you know, joined high school. And that it was just because, you know, you look at the schedule, oh man, I have to be in marching band. Oh man, look at all the more stuff we have to do, you know? But my parents really like, listen, you know, they said, Todd, just try for 1 year. And if you don't like it, fine, you know, but I'm so glad they made me, because it completely changed the way I look at it. Cause all the people I talk to from high school right now, I met through marching band, you know, and my band stuff. Right. And, all the folks I met, I still talk to in college. It's because of band, you know what I mean? And, you know, I have a social circle of, musicians, which is just great, you know? And,
it's got to be so cool for you as a teacher now to be able to see those same relationships develop with your students, right? Like knowing that that's going to be that for them in 20 years or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it. You know, it's fun when I hear that the two high school sweethearts in the band back, you know, 12 years ago are still together and are getting married and stuff. It's like, oh, well, that's cute. You know,
it is.
For you guys. And, you know, it's really cool. And, you know, just building that community up of people who support each other, you know, I think that goes a long way. It goes a real long way.
Yeah. So was school band your, like, one of your main introductions into playing music? Were you someone that was like playing piano at 4 years old? Like,
no, I definitely am not. I am, I tell this in my choir every year, I am not a good piano player. I am not good. I can fake stuff. I read chords better than I read music, because once again, the jazz brain, but you know,
jazz brain,
if you give me like a 4-part thing to read, I'm just gonna be like, I got a wonderful accompanist that helps me out and he does phenomenal work. And so no, I never did like actual music making and creation until fifth grade, beginning band. But my dad was in a rock band growing up. The cool part is he's one of seven, right? He's one of seven, and he had this band with all of his brothers and stuff.
What?
So oh, that's sick. It was very Partridge Family like, you know? And I'm trying, because I know he actually recently had a moment where he also had a my uncle, who's passed away now, but he played main lead guitar, and they were doing like something about the band. And, you know, my dad was interviewed for that too, you know, because they found like a random like program from like, you know, you know.
So we're all seven of them. We're all seven of them in the band then?
No, not all seven, but you know what?
I was going to say, that'd be a big group.
That'd be a Partridge Family situation. No, I think of the four people that were in the band, or maybe it was five people, three of them were brothers. Three of them were part of the family. And my dad played piano, and he also sang, you know, and music.
Oh, piano and singing part. That's special.
Yeah.
That's a special combo.
Right? Yeah. It's like, you know, the perfect, you know, piano, you know, if he, in another life, maybe he's sitting there playing piano and singing at a, you know, at a bar somewhere, you know?
Right, exactly.
My dad did that growing up. And so at a very young age, music was a part of, you know, even if I wasn't doing it myself, I was surrounded by it like all the time. You know, my dad still played. We had a keyboard in the office that he, you know, regularly played, and he didn't mind me playing around on it, even though I had no clue what I was doing. And I think that exploratory thing is really important for especially young kids, you know. Yeah. You know, sometimes you just need to let the kids sit down and plunk for a little bit, you know, and that kind of gets the spark going of, oh, this is kind of cool, you know what I mean?
So it's always, especially when you feel like it's your idea too, right? Like, I'm going over to plunk.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, we have a piano at home, and I have a 4-year-old, and she plunks and she loves it. We said, do you want to learn how to play piano? She's like, I already know how to play piano.
Now, if that's not a jazz musician, I don't know what is, right?
Right? That's right. I'm like, yeah, that's right. You know. So
there are no wrong notes.
just more correct notes, but never wrong. So my dad, you know, really kind of surrounded me with music at an early age. And both my parents were very supportive, still are supportive of new music and stuff. I'm very lucky that both of them, you know, were there for almost all my performances. Even today, there are a lot of times they go to my current performances at my high school as I direct and stuff.
Oh, nice.
They're still in the audience, you know, and they're still enjoying music. And my dad and I, especially, you know, when it came time for like solo ensemble time, he would be my accompanist for the solo ensemble. And bless his soul, he never knew how to read music until recently. So back then, he just had to like do it all by ear. You know,
I don't understand that. I've got a brother that plays piano just by ear, and it does not connect in my brain in the same way. I'm astonished by it.
I agree. It's hard. And but he was always able to do that. You know, and he just listened to it. And he said, "Okay, I think I got it. It may not be exactly what's on the page, but here you go." And you know, it was fun. Those are the things I remember about, you know, solo ensemble. I don't remember rating I got or whatever. I remember me and my dad sitting in the office practicing, you know, the music together, and him like, you know, having that time with me and sharing music with me at like 6th, 7th grade, you know, for solo ensemble contests and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, just that love kept on going. In high school, I was lucky to have a great teacher in high school and a great experience there. And here we are now. I'm glad I didn't quit, because I don't know what I would be doing right now.
Right. Yeah, I know. Sliding doors. Who knows? How about saxophone? Like, how did you get to that?
You know, I just always liked the saxophone sound, you know?
Yeah.
So 5th grade, I was always a big kid. In 5th grade, I said I would like to play saxophone. And my instructor at the time, he's like, okay, well, you're a big dude. You're going to play tenor saxophone because it's the slightly bigger one. I'm like, okay, that's fair. Sure. You know?
Okay, yeah.
I'm a big boy. I could take a tenor sax. That's not a problem. And, you know, I'm happy about that, because that got me really into listening to a lot of tenor saxophone jazzers, you know, the Coltranes and stuff. And so, you know, I just listening to them and listening to that at a very young age is like, oh, wow, yeah, that's the instrument I play. That sounds awesome. I don't sound like that, but I could try, you know. And that was very exciting. Very inspiring, you know.
I'm curious about how you get from, his you know, we always like to dive into people's like teacher origin story too. Sure. And I know that for a lot of people that are music teachers, right, it starts with music, and then a lot of times it like naturally becomes like, oh, I'll teach some lessons, or I'll do this, and then you start in, you know, it starts to become a bigger and bigger part of it. I'm mm-hmm. curious for you, when did it transition from, you know, I play music to I want to teach music, and this is something that I really enjoy, that aspect of it too, on top of the playing of the music?
Yeah. You know, when I was in high school, you know, the first time I was able to start teaching people was, you know, I lucked out. I don't know, luck, skill, whatever you want to call it. But my first year, I was able to go into like the top jazz band as, you know, tenor one, you know?
Right.
And so at a young age, you know, 14, 15, I was already at that point kind of teaching a little bit about, you know, just a little bit from other low reed players and stuff.
Yeah.
My junior year, you know, they give me that section leader job, you know, because I applied. Hey, yeah, you're the low reed, low brass section leader. And you know, that helped. I mean, I loved it. You know, I loved helping people. I loved helping people figure out music. And then after that, you know, I started giving some private lessons when I was in high school, you know, just for people who just started playing saxophone fifth grade or something, sixth grade. But, you know, it was a little bit of income. But more importantly, it was like more experience and stuff that I got to experience that. I'm like, okay, no, I kind of like this. And then when it came time to like, okay, what do you want to do with your life? The two things that came in front of me, I wanted to do a music teacher or a psychiatrist. I took a psych class and I'm like, I don't want to do this. But I love music, you know? So from there, you know, went in there and that's kind of where it all started, you know, is that opportunity in high school to be a section leader, I think was kind of the eye opening, like, you know, I could see myself having fun with this, you know, and doing this for a full time.
Were the people in your life like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
You know, I think that, I think my parents, I mean, my parents, once again, and my family in general, incredibly supportive, you know. I could have told them I wanted to do anything and they would have been fine with it, you know.
But
they, I definitely think, you know, by the time I was a senior in high school, I think most of my friend circle, and they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. He wants to go into, you know, teaching and stuff like that. And I'm, like I said, I'm very lucky I did, and I'm happy that I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned that you had some, you know, lucky to have some really good teachers when you were in school too. And, you know, like it's a huge part of the foundation of this show is that, you know, pretty much everyone hopefully has had a teacher who made a big impact on them and helped them become who they are. And all of our teachers, including yourself, are nominated. You were nominated to be on the show by a former student, which is awesome.
Yeah.
But
awesome.
I'm just curious, for you, if you want to, you know, as much as you'd like to shout out just any teachers that you've had who made a big impact on you and what that meant.
Yeah. So, you know, high school, there are two teachers in high school that I will never, you know, forget. One of them is my high school band director, Christopher Booty, who was at Rolling Meadows High School for years. Retired, and then he's an assistant director at like I think Maine South or something. He got a good 2 months of retirement before he jumped.
That's all I needed. That's a recharge.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, he failed at retiring, but you know, that's okay. It is hard. He needs to go. But he's the one who really made me want to be in band, you know, and want to do music and want to, you know, push myself with that. The other teacher I had in high school that I'll completely unrelated to music was Mr. Jargsdorf was his name. Jargsdorf. So he was a history teacher. But the thing that stuck out with me, I was taking his class. It was it was essentially an advanced class. We were on block schedule, but we met every day. It was a combination of history and English kind of rolled into one. Yeah. And it was a cool class. Like it was like an everyday thing. It was an optional thing. I'm a history buff and all that stuff. But that was the first class I ever started getting a failing grade in, ever. And, you know, I always was, you know, I was, once again, I'm lucky that, you know, elementary, middle school, I was usually fine. But high school, you know, that was the first class that I like sunk below. But what stuck out with Mr. Jargsdorf is he never treated me differently when I was failing. You know, I was still treated like an A+ student, even when I was getting a 55 in the class. And I think that stuck out to me because I'm like, man, some teachers don't do that. And some teachers, you know, if you're not in that in that zone, you're kind of shuffled to the side a little bit they roll the eyes, you know, when they come on in. I will always remember that he treated me just like an A student and just like anyone else in that class. And I ended up passing the class, you know, and no problem there. But that stuck with me that he really did that for me or was that kind of a teacher that's like, it doesn't make a difference. You're still important. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and I was curious again, like along those lines, like if any of those lessons, whether it be from, you know, your teachers that you had who are, again, like, more specifically doing what you do now, like, you know, your music teachers you had, or like teachers like that where, you know, you have lessons that you think back about that and you're like, I'm trying to, you know, somehow kind of emulate or bring a little bit of that into what I do now.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I think most of my teaching, I was very honest. I whenever I do stuff, I'm honest, and teaching is a very cyclical thing. I call it stealing. I stole most of my stuff from the good teachers in my life, you know, the Christopher Booties. I had in my undergrad, I had some fantastic teachers at, I went to Illinois State University, and, you know, some great teachers there. And for my master's, I ended up going to, Northwestern University, and great teacher there. She just retired, Dr. Maud Hickey. That creating music class, that digital music class that I was talking about, directly almost came from what she was doing in her research at the time. She was, you know, a college professor, you know, at Northwestern, but she would actually go into the juvenile detention facilities of Cook County and teach the kids how to make their own beats to rap to and stuff. And boy, I was like, that is such a freaking cool thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I want to do that. You know, I want to teach the kids that maybe aren't the ones who signed up for the long things, you know, the long days and the competitions and the playing your instrument. They just want to play music and they don't know how yet, you know?
Yeah.
So I like ripped a lot of my content, you know, and I put my own spin on things over the years or even right then, you know, but because I definitely do not have the same demographic as a juvenile detention facility at Cook County, you know,
right.
But it's, but the core is still there, you know, and some of those teachers, I just, like I said, I take from, I adapt for what is good for me or what's good for my area. And, you know, if it doesn't work, the good news is I get another shot at it next semester or next year. We make it better and we make it better. So,
yeah, you know, it's in like speaking of just, you know, the ways that you can have an impact on teachers, right? Like when you're talking about your teacher in high school, where like you felt like you were treated the same way no matter what was going on in the class. And I think about like even the note that your former student sent over when they nominated you. I think I sent this over to you. If not, I can read it. But they were talking about how, you know, that you helped instill a lifelong love of music. It's one of their favorite teachers. But like something like instilling a lifelong love of music, like that's a huge thing in someone's life. And I always think it's fascinating to ask teachers about just like how. It's the Spider-Man thing, right? Like it's the great power comes great responsibility thing, right? Like that you don't know what you're going to say to someone that's going to have a huge impact on the rest of their life, which it's a huge responsibility. It can be maybe a little bit even paralyzing if you think about it too hard about just like all of the day-to-day interactions that you're having that you never know what's going to stick with someone. But I'm curious for you, is that something that like probably I would imagine is something that with more experience, you know, with years in the classroom is something that you can appreciate more and more about that kind of impact that you can have day to day.
It is something that I will never take for granted. And because I've had, you know, we're mentioning all the teachers that I am touched and I'm like, oh man, I love, right? I'm not talking about some of the teachers that did say some of those things and did impact me. And in some ways, probably still does a little bit, you know? And, I know everyone who sits in my classroom, you know, no one wakes up and says, I want to be a jerk today. You know what I mean? No kid says that. It's if there's something going on, it's because something is happening in their life and you got to give them a little bit of a leash sometimes, you know, like what I do is important. Sometimes there's more important things, you know, and, you know, I think that's incredibly important to just remember that, you know, even if you come from an awesome household like I did and supportive parents, and if you say something, it could stick with people, either it be positive or negative, you know? So trying to always like, you know, give everyone the benefit of the doubt, you know, be there for them when they need to, you know, I have an open door policy, you know, if they want to sit down and just chat with me, sit down and chat with me. That's cool with me. You know, I eat lunch in my office because I don't mind if kids come in my office or something and want to just get something off their chest, or maybe they just want to chill and talk, you know, and hey, that's cool. That's cool with me. You know, I'm lucky that I get to teach a lot of cool people, you know, a lot of cool kids and a lot of cool students. And it's always something that it's on the forefront of my mind. It's like, okay, how do you want to handle, you know, in delicate situations too. That's always the part where I'm like, okay, how do you want to handle this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's, my wife says it's kind of a blessing and a curse. I'm very patient, and I make sure I run through things a lot in my head because I know the importance of what I might say that really could either do something to really inspire a kid or, you know, someone to want to do more stuff or cut someone down more than I think it deserves to be, and something that you might not even intend to cut someone down by just by maybe that wasn't the right thing to say at that time, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm fascinated because you wear a lot of different hats, and, you know, like you have a very specific role where, and again, like you're doing things, you know, like choir and band, which is like things that people are really outwardly like really passionate about often, like really excited about these things that are coming up. And again, we mentioned that, like, you know, band and choir are also like really important social experiences for so many kids. And so I was just curious for you, if there's any story that comes to mind, you know, I say recently, but, you know, anytime, you know, in the last year or something like that, just any moments, whether they be, you know, they could be profound, they could just be funny, they could be things that just stick out, any moments that you're like kind of encapsulated where you're like, yes, this is why I do what I do.
Yeah, you know what happened? I could tell you something that happened literally today in band. In band today, we're working on a piece. We're in the piece right now, like kind of in the middle of something that's happening, you know. And when kids are starting to figure out the parts, you know, they're really focused on what they're playing, what they're doing, and not necessarily worry about whatever everyone else is doing, you know, at that stage. And that's where you want everyone to be, you know. So just that moment of just like, stop the band, explain to them, okay, listen to this, listen how they're doing it, listen about this. Think about how this music wants to be sung, you know? How do you want to sing this, you know? And just like the night and day difference between that first run and that other one run, which they had the same notes, they had the same rhythms. The kids didn't magically know their notes or rhythms better the second time, but that tiny little just, hey, think about that, blend together, you know, and just reminding them to think less about this and more about this, it sounded like night and day. And I heard like three kids be like, yeah, you know, we stopped that and like that was it, you know, we got
that's
those
the magic. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, you know. That's always great, you know. And, you know, I also had a proud teacher moment last week. I've been taking my students to go to the Chicago Lyric Opera at least once a year.
Oh, that's
years.
Amazing. I just got to go there for the first time a couple of months ago. We went to go see Patti LuPone there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Beautiful building. I
incredible.
Love it so
yeah.
Much. So, yeah. But, you know, the Lyric Opera has this wonderful, like, student day where, you know, many of their shows, they're only $20 a ticket. And, you know, I tell the kids, like, we make it like a whole day out of it. You know, we go there in the like mid-morning, we have lunch at the Chicago French Market. You know, we walk to the opera, we see this opera. So it feels like a very upscale day, especially for, you know, people who, I have some kids who've never even been in the city before, you know?
They've never been
in Chicago, you know? So
let alone this like incredibly ornate building, you know?
Right. Let alone the cultural side of everything else. But it's so cool because when I went there, this time I went with two of my feeder schools. We all brought some kids. And one of the feeder schools are currently being ran. The band director is a former student of mine. And he's doing the program over there. And so I go there. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Then we are in the French Market. And another former student of mine, who's a band director down south a little bit more, she's there with her kids too. And we're like, and she's like, you're going to the I'm going to the opera. I get there and there's another one of my former students who's there, and she's not even a music teacher. She's there with another group of kids, but in that one moment, I saw three former students with other kids going to this opera. And I'm just like, oh, that's so cool. You know, it's so cool to be able to give other kids that experience and being like it was a proud teaching moment. Like, okay, at least if anything else, all these trips, if I got these three people to keep going and doing these things, you know, and maybe one of or two of their kids are going to do the same thing down the road, you know, and that's so cool. That's so cool.
Yeah, that's a moment you can't plan. That's like your own little like Avengers Endgame crossover moment.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's just like, man, so cool. It was such a cool experience to have in that moment. So, and of course, you know, the kids all loved it too. You know, I always tell them the opera's not just fat people with Viking helmets singing. It's not, you know, that thing.
But sometimes that's sick too, yeah.
That's my favorite. Wagner's Ring Cycle is my favorite, which... fat people with, you know, Viking helmets. That's my favorite. But, you know, they could do other stuff, right? They could do other stuff. And they're always shocked. They're always shocked. I think most of the people come out of there like saying, oh, that was not like what I thought it was, you know?
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's very cool to go on those kinds of trips.
You know, I've got a couple, just a couple more questions for you, Todd. And these ones, a little bit more random. We can go a little more rapid fire on these ones.
Whatever you want.
We mentioned really early on about the music appreciation class that you teach, which I think is, again, you get a ton of different students into that one. And and just something about music appreciation and like what you're trying to accomplish in that class that you think is like more important than people might realize. Because I think there's a lot of people just generally that are also like, I'd like to appreciate music more than I do now.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, in that class, my two goals are trying to, one, let kids figure out what they like about music when they listen to it. Why do you like this? You know? And sometimes they have no clue. They look at me, like, I don't know. I just like the beat. It's like, okay, but what about that beat that you like, you know? So trying to kind of explore what everyone's tastes are and kind of put that into words. The other thing I love doing is whenever we're able to compare the old stuff happening to the current stuff happening, you know, like people, you know, the big, you know, drama of music today, you know, the Drake Kendrick Lamar feud going on or something.
Of course, yeah.
Yo, back then, you know, they didn't have Twitter or whatever, but they, you know, there are some people going at each other, you know, Felix Mendelssohn and Wagner did not like each other. And they made that very, very well known. And same thing with like Giovanni Artusi and Claudio Monteverde. You know, we just did a unit on that. And it's just like, you know, they disagreed with each other. And if they were online today, they'd be shooting.
Monteverde fire. Had Twitter. You don't know what
they'd
happened.
Be there. They'd be their type. Wagner especially, I think, would be the guy. So, yeah. So I think that's really what I love about music appreciation is kind of bridging those gaps too.
I also want to ask about just like how you, like, as someone that is just thinking about music every day, like professionally, you have to appreciate music, right? Like how that evolves in your own life in terms of just like listening to music for pleasure and like how that changes in your life where you're thinking about music so much. Are you able to turn your brain off and just like jam out? Do you find, is there a part of yourself that is kind of constantly thinking about the underlying architecture at this point?
You know, I think I do think about the underlying architecture a lot still, but you know, that's part of the thing that I love listening to it now.
Yeah.
You know, that's now part of my joy is now that I could hear that stuff, you know, and I think learning, I learned early on in my career, actually at Northwestern, just think really openly about all genres of music, you know, and just taking all that stuff in, you know, and rap was never something that spoke to me very much, but now I could listen to it and I could appreciate it, you know, because it's just opening that mind, you know, I always tell the kids, like, they ask me, like, what do you listen to on the way home? I actually listen to podcasts and stuff because I need to kind of have just like a moment of just, you know, reset myself. But then at home, if I'm by myself or something, I listen to a ton of different stuff on my own in different genres. And sometimes it is just a vibe too, and just to like have something on the background. And other times it's, you know, I'm listening to it and only listening to it and enjoying what it is.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Other random one. I had a marching band related question.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
I still don't 100% or understand how the choreography of marching band happens. I don't know how it's possible without constant drones and seeing everything from above. Todd, are you guys spelling letters and different things on the field? I don't understand. It's witchcraft to me. Help me out here.
No. Okay. You know, so marching band, first of all, it always depends on the sizes, right?
Sure.
If you have a huge band, you know, at ISU, they have like over 400 people in the band. You could spell out whatever you want. one, right? You know, but when you have a band of 50, 40, 50, 60, you're not spelling much, you know? So at that point, you know, I write drill right now. I'm the guy who writes the drill, which is, you know, the actual movement on the field.
Right.
And my main thing is, you know, putting the marching band has kind of turned into more of an artistic stage thing now, where it's like a little less about, like, you know, spelling things out or making, you know, square, you know, go forward and split into a line. It still does that sometimes, but like now you're kind of thinking about more about, okay, like dance and stuff like that. And I work with someone, an incredible, my choreographer, the one who does my flags and the color guard, and winter guard. Her name is Christine Zuge, and she just got a second place at state. So they did awesome. We're into guard. Yeah. And, you know, she has so many good ideas. So a lot of times me and her at the beginning of marching season would just sit down and be like, okay, I have an idea for this, but I don't know how to make this look good. You know, what do you think? And, you know, luckily she, me and her bounce ideas off each other. And, you know, it is different though. You know, it's a very different thing of when you put movement to music, you know, it's a different beast, but it's always like thinking about phrasing, you know. That's like when I write drill, I think about the phrasing just like I would if I'm playing my saxophone. So
the synchronized movements, it's just so impressive to me. And I just think about what I would be feeling in that moment where I could just like, I would be petrified that I'm going to step out of line. I'm going to ruin this whole thing.
Well, I get that, you know, and I still remember my first year I ever did marching band in high school. My parents were like, we never saw you move that fast in your entire life. Ever. And you know what? That's fair. You know,
you're like, listen, I had purpose now.
Yes, exactly. After my years of marching band, I don't think I've ever moved that fast again since then, you know? Like, it's like you said, it's like you just want to, you're in that zone, just like a sport or something like that. You're in the zone and you want to make sure you're doing things not only for yourself, but for the group, and make sure things are good and sound good and look good.
All right, Todd, we had two more, and then we'll be done. And they're kind of the same thing, but we'll do one that's a little bit more general, one that's a little bit more specific, one that's more about like band and choir, one that's more about kind of like teaching in general, right?
Sure, you
and
bet.
We always like to end all the conversations on this one. So we'll start off with like the more specific one about band and choir. So just it's literally, what's something about high school band and choir that you just wish more people knew?
You know what? I wish people knew how close everyone gets in those groups. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of people see the marching band or they see things, they're like, oh man, I don't know how they did that. They get that portion, you know, but you get lifelong friendships, and you'd be so surprised at how much people love it if you give it a shot. You know what I mean? Like, just try it. Try it for a year, and you'll be surprised at not only how much fun you're having, but you'll also be surprised in how many connections you make it with, you know, your friends and peers. And, you know, you get to know kids from, you know, your little freshman coming into high school, you're scared. Now you know some seniors, you know, and you know some juniors. And it's kind of cool, you know? It's kind of cool having that.
And then what's something about teaching you wish more people knew?
That's a good question. So I think for me, the one thing with teaching I wish more people, I think, knew, perhaps especially, you know, now, is that just like everyone, you know, a lot of all teachers, just like students, I said earlier, all students wake up and they say, no one says, I want to be a jerk today. You know, all the teachers who teach have put so much time and effort into prepping various things, you know, especially nowadays, you know. I'm blessed enough to now to work with a couple of people on a daily basis, teaching a co-class for called Humanities, and just seeing the work that my colleagues do, and they're English teachers, and just seeing their amount of work they do, I'm just like, wow, you know, and it's like everyone wants to be here for a reason, you know, and there's always going to be bad eggs, or there's always going to be that story or that one teacher, you know, but I wish more people knew how much us teachers actually love to be here and teach the students, you know, and see them grow. Almost everywhere in my school, I'm blessed to have a great amount of colleagues. They all feel that way. I truly do believe that.
All right, Todd, that was all I had for you. Thank you so much for doing this, man. It was a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed it too.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much. I was so, like I said, honored to be you know, honored to be emailed and, you know, seeing that. I loved it. So thank you very much for having me.
That was my conversation with Todd Stelmach. He's the music director at Marengo Community High School. Thank you so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. And as always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Todd. Please send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. And wherever you're hearing the podcast, subscribe, leave us a rating, share it with a friend. It's the best we can do to get even more perspectives on the show. A big thanks to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music you hear each and every episode of this show. And I've been your host, Peter Mudlin, and we'll be back with even more Teacher's Lounge very soon. See ya.